This is Fit as a Fiddle Plus, and we are talking tonight to Ilya. And Ilya, I'm not even going to try to pronounce your last name. Say that for me.
Kavoukis.
Kavoukis. Ilya Kavoukis. I love it. I love it.
Oh, thank
you. First thing that I want to ask you, and again, we're going to talk all about health and wellness on these particular meetups. This is our first one. So we're just now launching, and it's kind of a soft launch, as I like to say. And we're going to just put this on our platform and try to add value to as many folks as we can. And if there's any questions, they can contact me with questions. And in the future, once, you know, once we get on a roll, we're going to be doing this meetup the fourth Monday of every month at 6 o'clock. And so folks can tap in and ask questions in real live time. And I will be posting our speakers a little bit ahead of time and what their topics are, so folks will know which ones they want to, you know, put on their calendar to tap into. And so before we get started, I do want to ask Ilya, what is your backstory? Tell us a little bit about you before we actually get into our topic tonight.
Sure. Thank you for, first of all, for having me. It's a pleasure, an honor. So I was born in the late 60s, grew up in, you know, childhood in the 70s from Greek immigrant parents. And their whole idea around food was the more the merrier. You know, if you know, a plump child, like plump cheeks and, you know, like little extra was considered a good sign that, you know, so food was always shoveled in. But as soon as you got into your teens, if you had extra, that was a no-no. That was like, you're fat, you know, how come you're, you know, what's wrong with you, you know, like, and by all standards, I wasn't, but because I had like a more voluptuous figure than my sister, who had more of a stick figure, I was always compared to her. So, you know, I never felt like I was enough, you know, for the family. It was always, you know, too much, you're too loud. So I ended up, you know, my grandmother ended up raising us at one point because my family went through a separation. And my grandmother on my father's side ended up raising us. And she had like major food issues. You know, she was like a food disorder, you know, and she basically projected that onto me. So I ended up being this, you know, person that was always like a bit of a rebel. So she would say, you know, she would always make these amazing desserts and I'd be like, I want that dessert. And I would have one piece and then I'd go for the second one. No, you can't. You're going to get fat. Okay. What does that mean? You're not going to love me because I'm fat, you know? So I would be the rebel and I would grab the second one anyways. Right. So I'm giving you all this backstory because I wanted to show you how how we're brought up and how we're taught and how what we're told as children really affects our makeup, you know, and surrounding food and our health. So I ended up being, I would say about 20 pounds overweight, you know, in my teens, 15, 20 pounds, always had that little bit of a struggle with that. And then my 20s, you know, so I always had this issue, but I knew I needed to work at it. I needed to work at, because I love food. I continue to love food, but I needed to take care, you know, to not get hugely obese. So I ended up getting into exercise and had a, you know, an interesting relationship with exercise and health and all of that. And then had a baby in my early 30s. And, you know, that affects the body. And then, you know, the 40s come in and then the hormones and the shift. So I just kept looking for things that would help me be completely healthy, but naturally, not taking, you know, any supplements or any, you know, like weight loss supplements that are, you know, as far as I'm concerned, most of them are not healthy. So I just turned to yoga, I started meditating and really, and that was my path actually to heal a lot of my childhood trauma. around my physique, around my image of myself. So I really, I'm huge into, like, I became a personal trainer,
okay,
you know, yoga instructor, you know, like all of these things that I thought would help. And yeah, I mean, I think it's just a question of balance, really. and not to get too much into it right now, but that's my backstory that, you know, went from like this traumatized, you know, little girl, you know, that was by all standards pretty healthy, but, you know, was influenced by the people around me that had, you know, fear about me becoming, you know, obese. Like, what?
I understand. I did get a chance to visit your website. And so I was wondering, how long have you been doing what it is that you're doing now? Were you in, you know, a corporate job at any time? What is your background there before you actually started mentoring and coaching?
So I've been doing massages. I've been a massage therapist for the last 20 years, doing body work, reflexology and stuff like that. My first course in the alternatives was actually back in 94, was Reiki. Loved all the things about energy. And it's funny because now I'm really going into energy a lot now. So it's like a full circle. My instincts were right back then to start with the energy. But, you know, you couldn't make money with Reiki alone. So I, you know, I had started doing actual physical body work. But anyways, before that, I was, my mother had an antique shop. And actually, I'm in my mom's house right now doing this live. And you could tell a little bit the background.
Okay.
And she had, you know, she had a big workshop and we did restoration. So I worked there. I worked the store, did sales, all of that, you know, through high school and all of the, you know, and then eventually really, you know, randomly just decided to open up a small tea room, you know.
Okay.
In French, we call it salon de thé because the environment was so beautiful in the shop. And we started serving, you know, little sandwiches and tea and all that. And then it went into a full-blown restaurant. And then I decided to become a chef. Studied to be a chef. So then I really started to understand food and what I was really eating, you know, when you're eating cheesecake and all of these, you know, fancy colored desserts, it's like complete garbage. So I was like, oh my God, what am I eating? This is terrible. And also I have to mention that in my early 20s, I started having severe headaches, like a lot, you know, migraines. And what happened was I ended up going to a health consultant, a natural health consultant. And she said to me, what's your diet? First thing she said. And I said, well, I have a restaurant. I'm a pastry chef. I've decided to be a vegetarian. So I'm not eating any meat, but what do you eat? Well, I eat pasta and dessert and bread. And like, I had no idea how to eat back then, you know? And she goes, well, you've got a gluten intolerance, sounds like, you know, and it sounds like your liver is overburdened with all this sugar.
So, wow.
I said to her, I said, well, what do I have to do? She goes, you have to get off of wheat. So this was like, you know, 20, you know, almost 30 years ago. And I was like, what? Gluten-free? What's that? You know? So I would buy stuff that, you know, nobody would want to eat in my house because it tasted like cardboard. And
yeah, the gluten-free options aren't very good. Yes.
Yeah.
I understand that.
But now it's better. But back then it was terrible. And what happened was within a few weeks, like maybe 3-4 weeks, all of a sudden, like I had no more headaches. I had no more headaches and I was like fine and all of that. But I'm sorry, I went off on a little bit of a tangent because you asked me what's my backstory. So being in the restoration for many years, restoration business, I decided that I had no life. You know, the going to the natural health consultant taught me also about food, but she also taught me about, you know, having a quality of life, which I had no quality of life. So I decided to, you know, to study and what can I do to help, you know, get a quality of life, because I knew somewhere this was not normal. This was not, you know, to have to work so much, have headaches, not be functional, always worrying about money and always worried about business. And, you know, in a restaurant business, when you own it, if you're not there, you don't make money. Your employees steal from you. You know, they don't charge properly or they steal from you. So I had no life. So I was like, I got to get out of here. So then I went, started doing some sales here and there and some business, but that was no fun, and met my daughter's father. And right away we clicked, and, you know, within a year or two, We had a child, and I didn't have to work. He was supporting me for during that era, and I just knew that I could not go back to the restoration business or corporate sales or any kind of stuff like that. And I just basically went into body work because that was my calling. When I was 11 years old, I used to work on my mother's feet when she used to come home from her job. She was a bank teller.
Again, your instincts were correct way back then.
Yeah. And I just, I said, there's something really attractive to me to work on people. And that I've been doing that since, I would say 2000, early 2000. And I love it. I love it. And then it just, as you're working on people, it's a natural tendency to want to help them and start seeing patterns in people's lives and say, maybe if you, drank less coffee, or maybe if you took a little more breaks in the day, or maybe, you'd have a better quality, you'd think clearer. And it's just naturally unfolded to become a coach.
I love that. I love that. Mark says the same thing about me. I was in the salon industry for over 20 years, almost 25 years.
There you go.
And again, in my business, it was kind of my corporate job I'd created for myself. And I was there 12 hours a day because if I wasn't in front of a client, I wasn't making any money. So like you, I decided I needed to retire for my health, and for my peace of mind. And it was a big step. It was a huge decision. Yeah. I get that.
Nice. Yeah,
absolutely. Nice. And so
and
then
people are constantly talking to you, right? Doing their nails.
Well, and so again, I've been coaching for 25 years because everyone was like, Kathy, what do I do about this? I'm like, well, here's what I think, So I the coaching just kind of came naturally. Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. So again, I was going to ask what made you want to teach, but I guess that it's just kind of the natural segue from working with folks.
Yeah, that was the other thing I did as a child was I found myself teaching a lot.
Okay.
If I remember back, but the whole idea, and it's just a natural thing. I'm sure you know what it feels like. Every time I read something, even to this day, anytime I read anything, I've been into self-help since the 80s. I read the first book was Dr. Wayne Dyer's first book, which is Your Erroneous Zones. Do you remember that book?
Yep. I do.
Oh, I was like mid-teens and I was like, oh my God. And it's small book, right? Little paperback. And I think I read it like 10 times and I couldn't get enough of it. Then I got other books and I was hooked. I was hooked. I needed to heal myself. I felt broken and I need to heal myself. Many, many years later, I realized, I'm perfect. I just have this idea that I'm not perfect. So that's what I've been working on. You get it, eh?
Yeah, I love that. What do you love to teach the most?
Definitely self-care. Self-care. I love teaching people how to balance work. And I know it sounds such a cliche, but I'm saying it anyways. We do. We need to find a balance and between work and play. Right? I mean, ideally, I feel like whenever I'm working, with coaching with people, I'm playing. That's my playground. That's my, my sandbox. I love it. I could do it for hours and not get paid if that was the case. I would still do it. I just, yeah. So, but not everybody has that luxury, unfortunately, yet. But, that's what we're teaching, right? We're teaching people that they can have it all, that they can have a life and make money while they enjoy what they're doing. Or if they're not making money, what they're doing, somehow the money's coming and they're getting to do what they do, right? Because we know people like that too, right? Like you're the passive income queen, right? You teach people how to create passive income. Why do you want passive income? So you could do what you love, have free time and do what you love. Maybe that won't make the money, but the passive income does.
Correct.
So I love that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was looking at your website and I have no idea how to even pronounce this. What is, say it for me.
Ho'oponopono.
Say that again.
Which one? The H-O yes. word? Yeah. Yes. Ho'oponopono.
Ho'oponopono.
Yeah. Ho'oponopono. Yeah.
What is that?
Okay. So
I have not heard of that. This is new for me.
Oh, you're going to love this, Kathy, and anybody who's listening. And if you have heard about it before, you know, I always say repetition is the mother of all learning. And if you are listening to it again, or if it's the first, it's like, because you need to hear it, you need to be reminded. So here we go. So this is from Hawaii. This is an ancient healing prayer that came from, it was quite a long, long prayer that was basically condensed to four sentences. And basically what it does, it shows you that you are the center of your universe. And whatever you see really is just a projection of you. And when you judge something as being not good or even good, you are projecting your ideas, right, onto a situation. So what you do is you repeat these four sentences, and I'll tell you them. And if you punched in on Google Ho'oponopono, even if you don't know how to spell it, it'll come out. It's really popular now.
Okay.
And so it's four sentences, and it's basically you repeat in no particular order, but I'm just going by this order. So the first one is, I love you. The second one is, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And thank you. So you're not saying it to anybody in particular, you're not saying it out loud. You're saying it to yourself. You're saying it to divinity. You're saying it to that part of your higher self that you're petitioning the divinity. You're going, yeah, I'm in the process of judging this person, this situation. And I want to clear that. I want to clear that because it's all data, right? It's all memories that we have been accumulating and have been programmed to think that what we're seeing is no good. So when you say, when you catch yourself judging, right?
Okay.
You go, okay, oop. And in your mind, you're going, I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And thank you. And something shifts. And if it doesn't shift, keep repeating it. Because first of all, when we keep our mouth shut, we do a lot of observing and listening. And we just allow things to unfold without putting our two cents. And just being quiet and listening and repeating those sentences is huge in changing the vibration of things.
Interesting.
Yeah. Do you want to give me an example in your life that you judge? And I don't mean to put you on the spot. If you can't think of anything, it's okay.
Sometimes I claim that it's an observation, but if I really look inward, it probably is a judgment, and very possibly it could actually be something where I'm a little jealous. And it's a situation where maybe someone buys something that I think is just totally outrageously pricey. And I go, did you see that she bought that? So I'm stating it as if it's an observation. But on one hand, I see where I'm making a judgment because my tone indicates that I disapprove. And on the other hand, I'm pondering if it isn't maybe a little bit of jealousy of me thinking, well, I couldn't afford that. How did she afford that?
Well, good for you, Kathy, that you had that awareness, that you had that conversation in your head, that you were willing to just look at yourself, hold the mirror up to yourself and go, okay, so what's that really about, Kathy? And that's huge, right? Because we all know people who are not even conscious enough to do that, right? They're just spewing judgments and negative all over the place. So catch yourself is number one, and then do the Ho'oponopono, the sentences. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And thank you. Because it's got nothing to do with her. It's got everything to do with you. And then you turn it around. Okay. So yeah, I'm a little jealous. So how about just saying or thinking, you don't even have to say anything, could say, wow, good for her. for whatever reason she bought that, she spent that money, whether she can afford it or not, good for her. If it made her happy, great. If it didn't make her happy, no, you know. So you're right. Just like, you're acknowledging somebody for whatever's going on. You're just like, good for her. So there's, because really, when we have judgments, who's suffering?
Right.
We are.
Right. Yes.
We suffer because we're filled with this judgment and this negative feelings, and, you know, that doesn't serve us. So Ho'oponopono actually saved my, I could say, and I'm not over exaggerating, saved my life. I had a husband.
How does that connect that you feel it saved your life?
Okay, great. So thank you for asking. So I was married to a man, and maybe some women could understand this, was very jealous, very insecure, very controlling. If it was up to him, I would have closed my business. I would have stayed home and nobody would have seen me. Nobody, unless it was my family, just my family, no friends, no, you know, like lock up the prize in the little castle and don't, you know, that kind of thing. But thank God I had enough, you know, I was like, no, that's not going to happen. You know, I'm not closing my business. I love what I'm doing, you know, because yeah, but you're not making enough money. Well, you know, according to who, you know. But that was his thing, right? It was all controlling. And so you can imagine that it was very stressful. I was actually going through adrenal failure and I didn't know it. It was under that much stress.
Wow.
But I had put myself, and I won't go into the long details, I put myself into a situation where I could not get out of it, out of that marriage right away. Right. I'm sure there's some women here, even men, that can relate. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're in a situation where we can't just jump ship right away. We've got to make sure we get to the port.
Yes.
We dock and then we get off slowly. So that's what I had to do. But in the meantime, what happened was I had learned about Ho'oponopono at the time.
Okay.
And I learned and I'd been studying a little bit about Buddhism and stuff. So I realized that it was true what Ho'oponopono's basis was a good foundation. So I needed to apply the fact that I'm the center of my universe. It's got nothing to do with my husband. He's mirroring something in me, something that is scared, something that is insecure. And it's just bringing out the worst in him, right? I mean, you got to give him some credit, right? So I just kept doing my Ho'oponopono. I kept doing it and working it. And there was times where I was so scared. Like there was never any physical violence, but there was definitely emotional threats and all of that. And I just kept working the Ho'oponopono. And eventually, after 2 years, the marriage did end up dissolving because one day I just got up and left because I wasn't in a position I could do that. I'll use the example. I was the port. I was at the port. Everybody was, you know, all the passengers were off safely, and I could, you know, leave the ship as well. So I basically said to him one day, "That's it. It's done." And all those years, I was fearing violence. I was feeling a violent reaction. It was nothing. Absolutely nothing. And you know what? 3-4 months later, he paid for the divorce. I was free within 3 months.
Wow.
Because I just kept working on myself. I kept bringing it back to me. I kept bringing it back to me and not engaging in the drama that, you know, severe dysfunctional, you know, that I could have. But I just kept working on myself and just doing my forgiveness on myself and all of that and saying, okay, you know, you have a part in this. You have a part in this. What is your part? You know, and I realized I had given up a lot of my power to him. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't enough for him. He wanted it all.
You know? Interesting. Interesting. I was single for a lot of years. And so when I did finally start to date again, that seemed to be the common thread is I was already a business owner. And most of the time I would meet someone, we would have a few dates and then they would say, you know, if you'd sell your business, we might be able to. And I'm like, okay, that was a stopper for me. And I'm like, okay, you know, see ya.
It's just a certain era of men, I think, that do think that way. Because the younger men today, they're like, they want a woman who can work, bring in lots of money, who has the life, and then, you know, they can have their life too, mm-hmm. right? It's actually swung kind of the opposite. Yeah, there's still some men that, you know, do want to own you and all your time as well. But yeah, no, it's really important as a woman to have your own money, to have your own space, have a plan B, that you can just, you know, get off that ship whenever you need to.
You've mentioned this all in kind of in the theme of self-care. So why is self-care important to you and also to others? What makes it so important?
Well, along the theme that we were just talking about and being empowered, when a woman is strong physically, okay, like she goes and she takes care of herself, whatever that is. You like to go to the gym, go to the gym. You like to go swimming, go swimming. You like to do yoga, do yoga. Yoga makes you very strong, by the way. Everybody thinks it's so like, oh, it's stretching and relaxing. Uh-uh. It builds resilience like you have no idea in your body. So when a woman is strong physically in her body, it does have an effect on the mental, processes, the mental story that we tell ourselves, mm-hmm. right? But imagine you're not strong. You haven't gone to the gym. You're on your, I don't know how many kids you've had. You just don't have time for yourself. You don't have energy. How can you possibly think that you're going to even have a possibility of something better for you when you don't even have the energy physically to do it? So taking care of yourself, whatever that means to you, mm-hmm. even if you just meditate for 20 minutes a day, if you want to just start with that, 5 minutes, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and work up to 20, you start building a muscle, you start building resilience, and you start building brain reserve, which it gives you the patience. It's another word for patience, brain reserve. It just small little things you can start with. And then, because I don't know, you might have experienced this too, Kathy, when you make a decision in your life, right? And you start with one action that brings you closer to that goal, right? Uh-huh. You made a decision about a goal. You ever notice that the first one is sort of like a domino effect, then the other ones come super easy?
Yes.
Same thing with self-care. If you decide, okay, from now on, this was one of my decisions that I made many years ago. From now on, I'm going to give myself more time between appointments. Okay, so what I would do is if I needed 20 minutes to get to a place from my house to a client, I used to give myself 22 minutes. Like, why are you doing that? I always showed up late. I always showed up stressed. And I always had a great excuse. Oh, there was a tractor trailer and a deer crossing, because I live in the country. What's the matter with you, lady? So what I decided was I'm going to give myself 30 minutes to get to my appointment. Things started to change. I was just less stressed. I was mm-hmm. like, I got plenty of time. Why? Because I was giving myself plenty of time. And it's not because I had, you know, something I was, no, it's because I was, you know, putzing around doing something. And I gave myself the very, very minimum time mm-hmm. to get there. So when I changed that, then things started to change as well. I started to eat more salads, right?
Because you had time.
Because I had time to prepare them. Remember? Everybody's like, salads take forever. You got to chop, you got to da, 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 and you got to, and then it's all that crunching. It takes forever.
You can't eat them in the car where you can eat the McDonald's on your way.
There you go. You know what I'm talking about, girl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So when you make one decision, and the decision is, I am worth it. I'm going to start small. I'm going to get myself in shape, whatever the decision is. I'm going to lose the weight. Or some people advocate for saying, I release the weight, because you don't want to lose something. Because we don't like to lose things, we always try to find it, get it back. So I will release the weight. Whatever it is, you'll drink more water. Mm-hmm. You know, you
get enough sleep.
You get enough sleep. You take time with family, you know, whatever it is, you'll find that when you make the decision, things will start domino effect. They'll start falling into place.
Interesting. Let's talk about intuition. When you talked before, you know, that early on you were doing things like helping with body work at a very young age. And was that part of an intuition for you?
Probably. But I just know that when my mother was like, oh, I feel so good, that made me feel good. Mm-hmm. To know that I was relieving somebody's, you know, pain, helping them to feel better. That felt good. And I remember making a decision to go actually and study massage therapy to become a massage therapist. It was because I saw a woman working on somebody and giving the person relief. And I was like, yeah, I'm all about that.
Yeah.
And I committed to, you know, becoming a massage therapist, you know, spending the money and all the time. And I was, yeah, it just felt right. So to answer your question, intuition for me, I'll give you an example. When I was in about 18 or 19, I was with this guy who was like really bad news, but aren't they the funnest? I mean, you know, it's like I was just like the sun rose and set, you know, with this guy. I was like, but he was you know, bank robber, ex-bank robber, just got out of jail, you know, like, you know, druggy, you know, like the worst, right? And at one point I was like, this is the time where I was moving out of, like, I had just moved out of my family's house and got my apartment, but my apartment was really too small for the two of us because all of a sudden he wanted to move in. I was like, yeah, I just got out of jail. Of course you have no place to live. Come and live with me. What's wrong with this picture? So I was like, okay, I'm gonna find a new place, right? So we went apartment hunting, and we found a place. It was probably about 30% more than what I was paying now, and I was making minimum wage, so you know, I was just like barely making it. And there I am wanting to rent an apartment more expensive. Could I rely on this guy? Probably not, but I wasn't even thinking of that. We're coming back from the apartment and he was asking me, what do you think of the apartment? And the first thing I felt was like in my gut, like a knot, like something was pulling, like, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Well, my gut was telling me, get on the opposite side of the street this guy's going and go in the other direction. Get on. My gut was telling me, dump him right now. But I did not listen to my gut instinct. My gut instinct was right. And it did end up blowing up, you know, this toxic relationship and then gone. But I mean, just to give you a little bit of the backstory, when I was a child and I was going through stuff and doing things, I was taught, and I would say my father was primarily the one, I was taught to ignore that instinct.
Really?
I had a very good intuition as a child, but for whatever reasons, he felt like that was not good. Like, I remember him telling me things like, I'd be having a bowl of nuts, you know, like there'd be a bowl of mixed nuts on the table. And I'd be like, oh, I like those almonds. So I'd be eating all the almonds. And he'd be like, no, you can't just eat the almonds. What about other people? Think about other people. You have to eat all the nuts. So it's like my needs were not important. What I needed was not important. I had to think about everything. And that's typical of little girls who are taught to think about other people. Don't think about yourself. So that was just one example. So the whole idea was I was taught not to trust my instincts.
Okay.
/ intuition.
Right.
Back, you know, forward into my early 20s with this bad news boyfriend, my gut was telling me, get, run. Well, I was like, no.
So how do we know if we're making the right decisions?
You do know. We do know. Ultimately, we do know. We have to follow the cues of our body. And our body is constantly talking to us. Our heart is talking to us. Our body, it's physical sensations, right? But then the mind comes in. Our programming comes in, right? Our upbringing comes in. And it takes over. It starts justifying. Well, I'll give the example of a job. You know, you have two options, right? Mm-hmm. Of a job. I had a girlfriend. She had two options. She wanted to be a teacher and she wanted to teach in a school. She had an option of this one school. It was a French school because I live in Quebec with a French school. She had this French school and it was, you know, the salary was like, I don't know, $65,000 a year, you know, pretty good for a teacher's salary. And, it, you know, it was like a private French school. And then there was other school was the, I think it was the Steiner, you know, the alternative.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And she was only be making 36,000, but she had a young daughter and her intuition, her tuition would be waived. So it was actually more like 40 something a year, right? Because if she got the other job, she would have to pay to have her daughter in that school. Cause that's where she wanted her daughter to be. But her intuition was telling her go for the Steiner school. But her head kept going, oh, no, but there's more money here. And there's this.
Okay.
Well, when she made a decision to go to the other school, everything happened that it just collapsed. You know, eventually she couldn't get the job, something. And she ended up taking the other job, which she loves it there. She's super happy. So her intuition kept telling her, you know, she knew that this was the right choice, go to that school. Her daughter, she'd be with her daughter and da, da, da. But it's not as much money financially, right? But she'd be happier. And we don't put enough value on happiness.
Right, right.
So her body was telling her, no. I mean, she was getting sick just thinking about going to the other school.
Oh.
Right? Her energy got, as soon as she thought about, oh, having to go to work or whatever. So the body is constantly talking to us. But as soon as you start coming in with the thoughts, oh, but you know, there's more money in the school. There's more status. It's more prestige. You know, right then and there, that's the indication.
And you try to tell yourself that I'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be fine. Exactly. And everything in your body's going, no, it won't.
So I want to change the subject just a hint. Let's talk about the mind. Let's talk about meditation. Give me a little bit of background on your meditation practices and what that means to you.
Sure. So for me, meditation is just sitting and observing. I mean, we don't even have to sit. Just the fact that we can observe what is going on in our environment, what is going on in our body, what's happening, is a huge tool for our wellness. Because I'm glad you asked that after I explained intuition, because the more we listen, the more we sit and just observe what's going on, the stronger our intuition gets, the stronger it talks to us. It gets even louder. And it's like, it's just split second decisions. Cause they're like, yeah, no, my body says no. Cause you're so well in tune with your body.
Okay.
So how do you do that? So there's actually a thing called meditation practice where you actually sit. Now you don't have to be sitting in, you know, cross-legged yogini position. Could be sitting on the couch as long as your spinal column is erect and strong. You don't want to be relaxing, sit back, because that could put you into sleep very easily. So we want to be sitting upright, and you know, you could lean somewhat forward, backwards rather. And so you have some support. Like right now, I have some pillows propping me up because I don't want to fall asleep during your. So you just basically you know you could start by just observing your surroundings, observing, you know, what's happening in your body. And then eventually you can close your eyes and then just observe the thoughts that come into your mind. I mean, this is just basic. I mean, there's definitely more complicated, and I've actually come up with a breath and visualization practice that I offer, that I would like to offer anybody who was listening to this and wants it, can just email me and I will send it to you. Basically, it prepares the body and the mind for meditation. So that's step one, just observing. And then if you want, you can get a little fancier. You can do some breathing exercises to quiet the mind, you know, to, because the mind is loves things to do. So give it something to do. Focus on your breath.
Okay. In and out. Right.
And then the other part of the program that I come up with is really centering yourself and then using visualization and going in and creating more space in your body and really connecting with your intuition, really connecting with your body. And actually, I'm going to be launching, I'm still in the research phase, but I'm going to be launching a program in the future, in the near future rather, on how to use your own energy to heal. You know, sometimes you go to Reiki masters or, you know, you go to Qigong and you do all this, but actually you could do it yourself very easily. So the meditation, just to go back to answering your question, is a beautiful practice that we need to do. And I say need, I mean, everybody needs to be doing this to really have a healthier body and mind.
So how often should we do the meditation and for how long?
Well, I tell my clients, because when I was personal training people, sometimes I would give them a program and then they would go home and not do their program of it. And they would come back a week later and I'd be like, okay, did you do it? Go, no. How come? Ah, it takes too long. You know, so I'd say, why don't you just start with 5 minutes? Right? Just say, I'm going to get on the treadmill or I'm going to do 5 minutes of stretching. And it worked every time because you don't get into your outfit or put on your sneakers or, you know, you don't just do anything for 5 minutes. Once you're there, you're like, okay, yeah, I could do this. Yeah, this is good. You know, but it's getting over that initial inertia, right? Like that breaking that wall.
Yeah.
So that's what I tell my meditation, you know, for people with meditation, I go, just start 5 minutes. Put a timer, you know, you could put some nice relaxing music. There's tons of it now on the internet. You could light a candle. You can do like a whole little ritual around it or whatever you want. You don't have to make it even anything complicated. And you just sit and you just quietly just observe. And then after 5 minutes, you're like, oh, that's actually felt pretty good. And then you can do 5 minutes more and then 5 minutes more. I think the people, the one that's the most popular is about 10, 15 minutes at the beginning,
okay,
you know, and then you work up to, you know, 20, 30, 40, 45, an hour. An hour is a good time to set aside every day to do a meditation. But you have to build the kind of like that posture too, right? Because after 10 minutes, you might be, you know, not comfortable where you're sitting. So you'll have to get up and move. But as you do it, the more often you do it, the body will get, you know, more and more comfortable in the meditation position.
Okay.
And daily.
Do it daily. Okay.
Daily. And there's a meditation practice I actually learned, which is a world renowned. It's called Vipassana. And that's meditation they teach you, and they suggest to do it for 1 hour twice a day.
Oh, wow.
Once in the morning, once in the evening, because it's just a great way to kind of start and finish the day. And there's a famous meditator, I can't remember his name, but people would ask him, you know, how much do you meditate? He goes, well, you know, when I meditate, I usually about an hour and a half a day. But when I'm really, really, really busy, he says, he would say, I meditate 2 hours a day.
Interesting.
That, yeah. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. I love that. And I am definitely a goal setter. So, you know, I would probably come at it maybe a little in the wrong way.
All roads lead to home.
Yeah, I know. I would say, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. So whatever you do, you know, like when I first got into yoga, it's because I wanted the teacher's physique. I mean, he was hot. He was, you know, muscled and all that, because I was coming from the aerobics and muscle training world. And I was like, if I can do yoga and be like that, I want it. But it was not the case. But, you know, I ended up changing my life. So, you know, whatever your original intention to start doing meditation or yoga, as long as you're still sitting and still stretching many years later, it's all good.
I love it. I love it. Ilya, tell us, how can we connect with you? What is your website? How can we get in touch with you if we want to learn more?
Sure. So it's myname.com. So IliaKavukis.com. And I've got a website. I've got Facebook pages. I've got a Facebook group, Thriving okay. Professional Women. I've got all kinds of things. You know, people can reach out. If you just did Ilya Kavukis on Google, something would come up. My massage business would come up.
Well, here's what I will do. We're recording this. I'm going to put it on our platform, which is in Kathy Benner International Academy. teachable.com. And nice. We're going to have an actual platform there where we're going to save these recordings. And I will actually add some of your links
Fantastic. There
on that platform.
That's wonderful. So thank you.
We still have Ruth and Rita are still on the call with us. And so I want to open it up for questions and see if Ruth or Rita have any questions for you. Both of them have their cameras and their microphones off. So Ruth, can you still hear us?
Yes.
Do you have any questions for Ilya?
Not right now. It was very informative though. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, I did too. Lots of great information. I mean, everything from her backstory to her teaching to the meditation, the intuition. Yes, lots of great information there.
Yeah,
nice. Thank you. My pleasure.
Yes, and thank you for being with us. And Rita, are you still with us?
I am, and I just want to say thank you so much for everything that you shared and also for your vulnerability sharing such personal stories, because, you know, as women, I think we all have difficult relationships, traumas, whether it's from childhood to marriages and so on. And, you know, it's not always easy to talk about those things. But I do believe that you sharing those personal stories is definitely blessing people and letting them know that they're not alone. And there are ways out and ways to heal their own lives, just like you have, and are living the life that you want to live and deserve. So thank you so much for sharing that vulnerability.
Thank you very much, Rita. As a matter of fact, that's something I had to learn the hard way, you could say, you know, to be vulnerable, to be real, because one of the things that kept me in that toxic marriage was the fear of being like, oh, she can't even hold on to a husband. Oh, like, what's wrong with her? You know, she's supposed to be a therapist, and you know, and all of this negative talk, you know, this talk that was just keeping me stuck there, you know, and I just kept working on myself and going, you know what? Nobody else is in my head but me. You know, nobody's going to help me. You know, like we put so much value on what other people think, but when it comes down, when it comes down to the wire, are any of those people there to help you? No.
I get it. I understand. You know,
we have to do our own, you know, putting on our big girl pants, you know, and do what we have to do, because nobody is going to save our ass in the end. And that was a big lesson for me, to just, you know what? And like when I finally left the house and, you know, left his house and moved back to where I was living before, like nobody even like noticed. And I live in a small town, like 5,000 people. And they were like, oh yeah, oh, you got divorced when? Oh, I didn't know. Again, what was I thinking? You know, I was in so much fear. It was stopping me, you know, for no reason.
Yep. I think anyone that has gone through a divorce can look back and kind of realize that oftentimes, you know, they let themselves get in the way of what they, that intuition, what they know they need to do or where they know they need to go. So I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all about being vulnerable and being okay in your vulnerability. And we have to, as women, we have to share it. We have to share our stories. That's a huge message from me to me and me to everybody else.
Yes, that is huge. We do have to share our stories. Mm-hmm. And talking about that knot in your stomach and that intuition, you know, I have quite a story as well. And again, there are parts of it that I've not shared. And so it's been working on me that I need to do that. So so this is a very appropriate time for you to say that. I see Ruth smiling at me.
Yeah, there's so much, you know, we have so much shame, so much shame. It's like we're born with it, you know, born with the shame and guilt. And there's really, and the church, like religion, preyed on that. They knew that. So they preyed on us and they built these, you know, the Vatican was built on people's guilt. I mean, they have so much riches in there. Like, why isn't that shared with the people, you know? So it now it's the government, you know, putting the shame and guilt on us. So it's like, it's part of our DNA and where it's being used to manipulate us. And really we're divine beings. We are incredible beings. That is just, you know, a mental construct. We can just divorce from it.
But it takes meditation. It takes intuition. It takes practice. Yeah. It takes time.
Yeah. Self-love.
And it all starts with being aware.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ilya, thank you so much for being on this evening.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you being here. Again, I'm going to upload all of our recordings onto the platform, the Kathy Binner International Academy.teachable.com. And there is going to be a thumbnail there that says free meetup for Fit as a Fiddle Plus. And that's where you'll find it. And I get to create all of that this week as I upload this. And so, again, I appreciate you being here, and we will see everyone again next month, the fourth Monday of every month at 6:00.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you. Blessings.